Today is Monday, July 5th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. What's been the impact on the U.S. and NATO forces leaving the Bagram airfield in Afghanistan?
I think that has had a very serious impact on the hope, on the morale and, energies of Afghans.
Plus, more than 400,000 in Ethiopia's Tigray region are in famine.
One of the most distressing trends is an alarming rise in food insecurity and hunger due to conflict.
We'll have these stories and more next. Taliban insurgents have continued to make rapid territorial gains in Afghanistan. This, as the United States says its last remaining troops are expected to withdraw from the conflict-torn country by the end of August. The news comes after the U.S. announced on Friday that it turned over the Bagram airfield, a central hub of activity where operations against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were directed for nearly two decades. VOA's Ayaz Ghul explains the situation on the ground.
Well, what we have seen over the last few days, over the last month or so, that it's the Taliban that have been conducting major attacks and have so far within the past 2 months have brought like one-third of Afghanistan's 420 districts under their control, which is very significant. That is the only news which is coming out of Afghanistan. The Taliban have captured five districts, four districts, 10 districts, and even yesterday they captured 15 districts. We don't have the Afghan government anywhere. President Ashraf Ghani has not been, appearing in public, making no statements. So that's a worrying sign that Taliban are making these rapid territorial gains, and the Afghan security forces, who were trained by the United States and NATO allies for years, spending billions, tens of billions of dollars on this training project, are just crumbling. And in most cases, they are not putting up any resistance and simply retreating or surrendering their weapons to Taliban insurgents as soon as they attack a district.
On Friday, it was announced that the United States had turned over Bagram Airfield. What kind of impact is that having on not only Afghan troops, but the morale of people throughout Afghanistan who really saw that base as a central piece to the operations, not only against Al-Qaeda, but the Taliban from the U.S. and NATO forces?
Well, frankly speaking, the moment that announcement was made that the American and coalition forces have vacated the Bagram Air Base, I think that has had a very serious impact on the hopes, on the morale and, energies of Afghans, because I have spoken to people in Kabul and they are worried. There is total chaos over the last 2-3 days. People are really unclear and uncertain about whether they will be able to fight it off, the Taliban's offensive, now that this Bagram Air Base has been vacated. That has been the key to, containing Taliban advances in Afghanistan over many, many years. And now that that facility has been vacated, there is serious doubts and reservations about the capabilities of the Afghan forces to really utilize this base for any productive counteroffensive. So that really has fueled concerns and added to the uncertainty that has been prevailing for the past many, many months. But over the last 3-4 days, speaking to people on the ground, there is total chaos and they don't know what will be the end of this confusion, whether Taliban will take over Kabul very soon, because we have had reports that last night Taliban fighters tried to stage an assault on the Bagram Air Base, but then we heard from Afghan officials that they were able to defeat that attack and they were in full control of the Bagram Air Base. So that really has added to the problems facing the Afghan government and Afghan security forces and the nation in general, who don't know whether they're going to be ruled by the current government or the Taliban will soon regain control of power in Afghanistan.
Ayaz Ghul spoke to me from Islamabad, Pakistan. At least two people have been confirmed dead and over a dozen are missing following mudslides that swept away homes and cars in the town southwest of Tokyo. Associated Press correspondent Karen Chamas is up next.
The rescue effort in the seaside resort of Atami continues as approximately 80 homes were buried in mud. Hundreds of firefighters, military troops, and three Coast Guard ships worked for hours trying to reach those believed to be trapped or carried away by the mudslide. Witnesses said they heard a giant roar and then watched helplessly as homes got gobbled up by the muddy waves. Over 100 people have been evacuated as Prime Minister Yoshihide Suga set up a task force for the rescue efforts. I'm Karen Chamas.
In a statement released on Sunday, forces in Ethiopia's Tigray region said before it would engage with talks with the government of Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, Eritrean and other troops would need to withdraw from the area. Last week's ceasefire announcement by the Ethiopian government has been called a joke by the Tigray People's Liberation Front. A TPLF spokesperson said that for any ceasefire to be agreed upon, invading forces must leave the Tigray region and return to pre-war territories. There was no immediate comment from the Ethiopian government. Reuters' Maha Albedrawi takes it from here.
Top UN officials warned the Security Council on Friday that more than 400,000 people in Ethiopia's Tigray region were now in famine, and that there was a risk of more clashes in the region despite a unilateral ceasefire by the federal government. Acting UN aid chief Ramesh Rajasingham told the council that the humanitarian situation in Tigray had worsened dramatically in recent weeks.
One of the most distressing trends is an alarming rise in food insecurity and hunger due to conflict. More than 400,000 people are estimated to have crossed the threshold into famine, and another 1.8 million people are on the brink of famine. Some are suggesting that the numbers are even higher. 33,000 children are severely malnourished.
The Security Council held its first public meeting since fighting broke out in November between government forces backed by troops from neighboring Eritrea and Tigray's People's Liberation Front fighters with the northern region's former ruling party. Food aid destined for Tigray had been held for 4 days at a checkpoint controlled by government-allied Amhara regional forces last weekend. Ethiopia on Friday denied blocking the humanitarian aid amid accusations it is using hunger as a weapon. Images obtained by Reuters on Friday also show a bridge used to deliver supplies into the Tigray region destroyed. The pictures taken by Planet Labs visually confirm UN ground reporting of the Amber Bridge over Tiziki River being damaged. The World Food Programme raised the alarm of the destruction of two major bridges leading into Tigray from Gondar on Thursday.
Reuters reporter Maha Albedrawi. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller. Various news outlets, including the BBC Burmese service website and the Tan Luen Ket News Service, report that Myanmar security forces killed at least 25 people on Friday. According to a resident speaking to Reuters News, four military trucks dropped soldiers in the town of Dapayan early on Friday. A local People's Defense Force, or PDF, confronted them, but they only had makeshift weapons. A local PDF also told the VOA Burmese service that at least 26 people had been killed. A post by the Dapayan People's Defense Force on their Facebook page said that 18 of its members had been killed in the conflict, as well as 18 more wounded. The Myanmar military has not responded to requests for comment. As Tropical Storm Elsa necessitated the evacuation of some 180,000 people in Cuba over fears of flooding, Florida officials continued their preparation to bring down the rest of a condominium building that's still standing, 11 days after a portion of it collapsed on June 24th. Roughly 80% of the building had been bored for explosives by Sunday morning for an ensuing demolition. Miami-Dade County Mayor Daniela Levine Cava explains.
As both the governor and I have made clear, our top priority is that the building come down as soon as possible, no matter what time that occurs, and as safely as possible. Bringing down this building in a controlled manner is critical to expanding our scope of the search and rescue effort and allowing us to explore the area closest to the building, which has currently not been accessible to our first responders, given the great risk from this building, which is insecure. So as soon as the building does come down, when the site has been deemed secure and we are given the all clear, which should happen very shortly after the demolition, our search and rescue teams will immediately resume their operations on the pile and continue their search.
24 bodies have been recovered from the rubble, and authorities have said their next of kin have also been notified. Some 121 people remain missing. Dozens of people infected with COVID-19 died in Indonesia over the weekend when a hospital in Yogyakarta ran out of oxygen. The surge of daily new cases in Indonesia has pushed hospitals to build makeshift intensive care units and dedicate new quarantine centers. At least three new cemeteries for those who have had COVID-19 have been set up in the capital of Jakarta. In India, officials have announced that thousands of residents have been given fake vaccines. Officials say the shots were given in phony vaccine camps set up in several cities, including Mumbai and Kolkata. Officials say six people so far have been arrested in connection with the fake shots. Meanwhile, Britain, which has fully vaccinated nearly half of its population, is expected to announce an end to mask requirements. In the western U.S. state of California, Los Angeles County public health officials have advised residents to wear masks indoors to deal with rising COVID-19 cases involving the Delta variant. Because of the variant's rapid spread in the state, the advisory applies to even those who have been vaccinated against the virus. Anna Rice narrates the story.
The health advisory came just 2 weeks after California authorities had lifted most coronavirus restrictions in the state. The recommendation to resume wearing masks in public spaces because of the spreading Delta variant appeared on the Los Angeles Health Department's Twitter feed on June 28th. The news both puzzled and upset many LA residents. Kaylee was among them.
I've been vaccinated. I honestly believe that if you've been vaccinated and everyone else has been vaccinated, I don't think we need the masks anymore. I'm going to walk right in there and enjoy the fact that I get to go to the grocery store and be able to breathe.
Yet many residents are following the advisory and are concerned about the new coronavirus variants.
Probably yes, if they would say so. I'm not vaccinated yet, but if they suggest us to do so, I'll do it.
In May, only about 4% of those infected with COVID-19 had the Delta variant. By June, this figure had climbed to 14.5%.
This variant of the virus is a lot more contagious than, say, the common flu. This new Delta variant has more common traits with human protein. That's why it's so contagious.
The good news is that the vaccines, at least for which we have data, and that includes the Pfizer vaccine and the AstraZeneca vaccine, still seem to be effective in preventing hospitalizations and serious disease from the Delta variant. But the bad news is it is more infectious. That means it spreads more easily.
Experts say the Delta variant is especially dangerous for those who have not been vaccinated or have received just one dose of a two-dose vaccine. Also vulnerable are fully vaccinated people who suffer from chronic diseases or have a weakened immune system. That's why the county recommended that people start wearing masks again.
The reason why I think they're suggesting that even vaccinated people wear masks indoors is because we know most of the transmission from SARS-CoV-2 occurs indoors. And really the risk of catching SARS-CoV-2 when you're outside, particularly when you're physically distancing, is extremely low. But indoors, when you're around other people close together, particularly when you're there for longer periods of time, that's where transmission's more likely to occur, and wearing masks will help to prevent that.
People in California, unlike those in some other states, are getting their shots. Almost half of all state residents are fully vaccinated. The high vaccination numbers lead experts to believe there won't be another strict lockdown in California. Over 154 million people have been fully vaccinated in the U.S. For Angelina Bogdasarian in Los Angeles, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Protesters took to the streets in Brazil on Saturday, demanding the impeachment of President Jair Bolsonaro and more vaccines to fight the coronavirus pandemic. Reuters' Jason Albano has that part of the story.
Local media reported thousands attended demonstrations across at least 13 states. The country is grappling with the world's second deadliest outbreak in the global health crisis after the United States. That's on top of a slow vaccination rollout, as well as the government's refusal to back social distancing measures. Protesters demanded more vaccines to fight the outbreak.
If the people do nothing, nothing will change. That's why I'm here today.
Demonstrations were supposed to be held later this month, but were pushed up after new evidence of corruption came out against Bolsonaro. On Friday, a Brazilian Supreme Court justice authorized the opening of an investigation into Bolsonaro over alleged irregularities in the procurement of vaccines developed in India. That evidence was brought before a Senate committee, which is investigating the government's handling of the crisis.
Jason Albano reports for Reuters News. Ugandans may find themselves in jail for 2 months. They are found breaking public health controls in a new COVID-19 law. Through July, acts such as praying in open spaces, not wearing masks, hawking, street vending, and selling non-food items will get one arrested. These are now deemed acts that enable the spread of COVID-19. Halima Althumani takes it from here.
Samples collected in early June indicate that the predominant COVID strain currently in Uganda is the Delta variant first seen in India. Jane Ruth Acheng is the Minister for Health.
From our observations, we have noted increased transmissibility resulting in a fast-moving outbreak, more severe clinical presentations of new cases, and unfortunately resulting in poor clinical outcomes.
Acheng says Uganda will most likely reach the peak of daily case numbers in late July or early August before registering a slight drop in cases. That is why, through July, anyone found praying in an open space or outside a church or a mosque, not wearing masks, hawking, street vending and selling non-food items will be sentenced to 2 months in jail. Anyone found operating a bar or a movie theater, attending a seminar, cultural event or indoor sports event could face jail time if convicted. State Minister for Health Anifa Kawoya says the law is necessary.
These penalties are not punishments. In one way is to instill attitude change. That's the moment that you know that if I don't observe these SOPs, this will happen.
The new law also prohibits entry of visitors from India other than Ugandan citizens or residents. Anyone who aids in the escape of someone confined in a place designated for isolation or quarantine of COVID-19 can also be imprisoned for 2 months. The health ministry hopes that once the government can acquire more vaccines, fewer people will be severely affected and in need of critical care in hospitals. So far, 861,645 people have been inoculated with their first dose of AstraZeneca, and 129,257 have had their second dose. Between July and August, Uganda expects to receive 974,400 doses of the AstraZeneca vaccine from the COVAX facility and another 300,000 Sinovac doses from China. To encourage Ugandans to get vaccinated, the country is currently undertaking a study to monitor vaccine efficacy by counting COVID infections that may occur in vaccinated people.
Preliminary investigations showed that no hospitalized persons we are fully vaccinated at the time of illness. Therefore, there is no current evidence to support the allegations that fully vaccinated persons have acquired severe infection and died in Uganda.
Uganda has also applied for 2 million doses of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine through the African Export-Import Bank and the African Union, and another 9 million doses through the COVAX cost-sharing facility. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Elisa Lon Khan was chosen to lead Chile's Constitutional Convention, which will draft the nation's new constitution. She's a Mapuche academic and indigenous language activist. The Constitutional Convention is the world's first with gender parity, with 78 men and 77 women on the council. It also includes 17 indigenous representatives to draft a new constitution to replace the one that was written under Augusto Pinochet. 45 people were killed when a military plane crashed in the Philippines on Sunday afternoon. 42 of the victims were members of the army, and 3 were civilians who were killed on the ground when the plane crashed around noon outside the Jolo Airport in the southern Sulu province. It was not immediately clear what caused the crash, but officials citing witnesses said the plane with 96 people on board missed the runway at the airport.
This is Science in a Minute.
The cryosphere are the areas of Earth where water is found in its frozen form. According to the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the cryosphere includes the Greenland and Antarctic continental ice sheets, ice caps, glaciers, areas of snow and permafrost, as well as ice that is found in water. The National Snow and Ice Data Center says that the cryosphere also stores about 69% of Earth's fresh water supply. A new study published in the American Geophysical Union's journal, Earth's Future, suggests that our cryosphere decreased by more than 87,000 square kilometers each year between 1979 and 2016 due to climate change. The study, led by researchers at China's Lanzhou University, also proposes that most of the ice loss took place in the Northern Hemisphere. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. The World Food Program says that it has delivered the first batch of food for thousands of school children in Venezuela. Lisa Schlein has that story.
The delivery follows a deal concluded earlier this year between the UN Food Agency and the government of Venezuela. Schools in Venezuela currently are closed, so World Food Program spokesman Thompson Feary says his agency will provide take-home rations, which families will pick up at the schools where the children are enrolled.
Our plan is to reach gradually 185,000 people, including children under the age of 6 and school staff, by the end of the year. The ration that I've spoken about is enough to cover a child for 30 days, which is a month.
The WFP says 42,000 food packages have arrived at its logistics hub in Maracaibo, Venezuela's second largest city. Each package contains more than 11 kilograms of food, including rice, lentils, iodized salt, and vegetable oil. Venezuela's once prosperous economy has been in free fall since President Nicolas Maduro came to power more than 8 years ago. The United Nations says more than 5.3 million people have fled the country because of political repression and harsh economic conditions. Official figures about the health status of Venezuelans are not available. A WFP study in 2020 suggests, however, 1 in 3 Venezuelans do not have enough nutritious food to eat daily. A study by the Swiss charity Caritas of 5 Venezuelan states and the capital Caracas found 16% of children under 5 suffer from acute malnutrition. The condition can cause stunting, wasting, cognitive difficulties, and even death. The WFP says its work in Venezuela will focus on the provision of nutritious school meals, the rehabilitation of school canteens, and the training of school staff to observe and implement the highest food safety practices. The agency says it hopes to expand its school feeding program to include 1.5 million children and school personnel by the end of the 2022-2023 academic year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
4 people were found dead on Sunday as a huge fire raged for a second day in Cyprus, razing tracts of forest and gutting dozens of homes in a blaze one official called the worst on record. Reuters' Lauren Anthony has the details.
The blaze, fanned by strong winds, affected at least 10 communities in the foothills of the Trudos mountain range. It's a pine forest with densely vegetated shrubland that covers at least 19 square miles. Cypriot's president, Nikos Anastasiades, called it one of the most destructive fires we have experienced, adding that the state would stand by all those affected. The victims were found dead close to Odu, a mountainous community north of the cities of Limassol and Larnaca. Witnesses say they were found a short distance from a vehicle that appeared to have crashed. Egypt's foreign ministry said it had been informed by Cypriot authorities that the victims were Egyptian. Nations including Greece, Italy and Israel have offered their assistance in fighting the blaze. The cause of the fire, which started around midday on Saturday, remains unclear, though police said they were questioning a 67-year-old person in connection with the blaze. Cyprus experiences hot summer months, with temperatures in recent days exceeding 104 Fahrenheit.
And that would be 40 degrees on the Celsius scale. Lauren Anthony from Reuters News. And finally, VOA Music Time in Africa host Heather Maxwell, as well as guest Kwame Ofori, break down a new music release from Ghana that's trending on both sides of the Atlantic Ocean. The tune shows a real sweet tooth for all varieties of chocolate, just ahead of World Chocolate Day on July 7th.
So many girls in the club, but I got my eyes on you. When she pull up in bikini, so fine, and I got that thing.
Hello, Kwame. How are you?
Hey, Heather. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So let's talk and listen to this song by DJ Akua and featuring Kwame Eugene. It's a new single that came out. I just love it. It's called Yes, Coco. So, Kwame, you brought this song to my attention. I'm so glad you did. It's very sweet. It's nice. And I like the male-female collaboration. Tell me about the song.
So, Yes, Coco is by DJ Kia featuring Kwame Eugene, our very own Kwame Eugene, Ghana's rock star. And it's just beautiful. She's celebrating the skin, the brown skin, the black skin, like, you know, different shades. And also, it's like a double-edged sword where in Accra or in Kumasi, wherever you live in Ghana, there are these people who sell cocoa drinks. And when they sell it, you know, they scream, yes, cocoa, come buy, you know, this cocoa drink. So it's like you are enjoying the beauty of the brown skin on the streets of Accra. Plus, you are hearing people screaming to you to come buy this cocoa drink. So I just love that, you know, beauty there where, you know, it just reminds you of exactly.
Oh, that is wonderful. I really like DJ Akua's style. I mean, she's a great rapper. She also has a nice, unusual visual style. She's a little tough, you know, not too girly. But she's still wearing a dress. She's still looking beautiful. But I like the whole package. Is she also based in Ghana?
No. So she's based here in the US of A. She actually lives on the East Coast. I think the toughness is coming from a place of she being DJ Akua and, you know, being in a male-dominated industry, she definitely has to be tough. So I guess that's what you are seeing. And I also love that she's not too girly in the video. So it doesn't take away from the message of the video, which is to praise the brown skin, the Yes Coco skin.
Yes Coco. I mean, what about white chocolate? Do they have anything like that in Ghana?
Hey, it's chocolate. It's all from the same chocolate. So white, brown, dark chocolate, it's all chocolate. And we celebrate all of it.
All right. So that was the new song by DJ Akua and featuring Kwame Eugene called Yes Coco, just released June 7th. Thank you, Kwame, for bringing it to our attention and for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure.
And that's going to do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to stay up to date with world news and events 24 hours a day. You can do so by pointing your web browser to voanews.com. Until next time. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a great day.